Welcome, everyone. I'm Nikki Medoro. I'm with KGO Radio, and I will be your session MC today. So thank you all for coming. KGO Radio has been a proud partner for several years for the California Conference for Women. And if this is your first time ever coming to this conference, let me just tell you, this is my third time emceeing, and I always learn so much. You are going to, you'll be inundated with the amount of inspiration and information that you're going to get. And of course, starting with this session, it's called Balance Quest, Building a Life That Works for You. Sounds great, right? We're all women, busy, busy women. But how do we balance everything that we want to do? Well, we have an amazing hour in store with Laura Vanderkam. Now, you could say that Laura knows a thing or two about making life work for her and for you. She's the author of several books to better manage your time so you can get stuff done. Some of them are called I Know How She Does It, What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast, and 168 Hours. Now, you may have read her work in publications like Fast Company, Fortune, The Wall Street Journal. She also has a great blog if you want to check it out, lauravanderkam.com. So get out your notepads, get your questions ready, and put your hands together for Laura Vanderkam.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that. I know we still have some people coming in. I know the first session may have gone a wee bit over. It's always awkward with the time management person when you have to start late. It's all right. So while people are coming in, I thought it might be fun just as a way to entertain ourselves, as I know people are still finding our seats. We have a lot of busy women in this audience. I thought it would be fun to find the busiest person in the room. We're going to do a little quiz to find that. There is a prize, so you can answer honestly. So we're going to 10 questions. Give yourself a point for each yes answer, all right? First question, give yourself a point. If you get more than 100 emails a day, so real emails here, not J.Crowds, you can just write it down. You don't have to hold up your hands. I'm not keeping track of it. You keep track of it. All right, so give yourself a point for that. Question two, give yourself a point if you did work before 6 a.m., or after 11 p.m. in the last week? Question three, give yourself a point if you flew somewhere other than here in the last week. Question four, give yourself a point if you were double booked for a time slot in the last week. Question five, give yourself a point if you actually attempted to take two meetings or do two phone calls at the same time. Question six, give yourself a point if you have kids at home. Question seven, give yourself another point if you have three or more of them, or if any of them are under age three. If you have three children under age three, you can just give yourself all the points. All right, question eight, give yourself a point if you attended a conference or networking event other than this one in the last week. Question 10, oh, sorry, I'm only on nine. Okay, question nine, give yourself a point if you ate a meal in the car or on public transit in the last week. Question 10, give yourself a point if you schedule things in less than 10-minute increments. So on your calendar, it says 10 to 10:08. Do this. All right, we still have people coming in. That's great. Please just come in and find us out. We're just doing a little exercise to warm us up while I know people are coming in. All right, so add up the number of points you got on that quiz. I think we should do the no opt-out version here. I want you to stand up. All right, please stand up. Everyone. Thank you. All right, sit down if you have 0 or 1 points. Sit down if you have 2 points. 3 points. 4 points. 5 points. 6 points. Look around at who's. All right, sit down if you have 7 points. Who's still standing? All right, sit down if you have 8 points. Do you guys all have 9? Does anyone have 10? Any of you have 10? You have 10. Okay, I'm going to say you're the busiest person in the room. All right, congratulations, everyone. Give her a big round of applause. What's your name?
Kim.
Kim. All right. So Kim is the busiest person in the room. I'm sure you're thrilled to have won that. I have an audiobook for you afterwards. I know you don't have time to read, so hopefully you can listen to it while you're in the car. All All right, so Kim can get this afterwards. Anyway, as we saw, we are all extremely busy in here, and as you are looking forward to your illustrious lives, you may be wondering, will I always be busy? And the answer is yes. But I hope to convince you today that however busy you are, you can build the lives you want in the time you've got. To do that, though, we need to rethink some common misperceptions about time. And I'm going to share 7 of my favorite time management strategies that I hope will help you make more of your time, both at work and at home, whatever stage of life you happen to be in. First, a little bit about me. People often ask me how I came to the topic of time management. Unfortunately, it is not because I am always on time. I do get a little bit fussy sometimes when my sessions go over, but I was, in fact, once late to my own speech on time management, which was a wonderful and ironic moment for all involved. The truth is, I came to this topic a couple years ago when I realized something that was dumbfoundingly obvious in retrospect, but at the time seemed very profound, which is that we all have the same amount of time. We all have 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week. So when you meet people who are doing amazing things professionally, we all know these people, right? And yet also seem to have amazing personal lives too. They're raising happy families, they're doing amazing things in their community or both. It's not because they have any more time than the rest of us. Maybe they are allocating their hours in interesting ways that the rest of us can learn from. And so I've spent the past 10 years or so studying the schedules of people like this to see what are they doing with their time? What can we learn? How can we put those practices into our own lives? And so the 7 strategies I want to share today come out of studying people's schedules and interviewing them. And so let's go ahead and dive right into those strategies. So the first strategy I want to talk about is what I call minding your hours. Mind your hours. People often ask me, okay, if I want to spend my time better, what should I do first? So I say the first thing you need to do is figure out where your time is going now. Because if we don't know where the time is going now, how do we know if we're changing the right thing? I mean, maybe something we thought was a problem really isn't, or something we haven't even thought of is taking more space in our lives than we imagined. So we want to make sure we're working from good data. So there's lots of ways we can figure out where the time goes. I always suggest people try tracking their time for a week. You can use a spreadsheet, which is what I do. If you want to go to my website, you can find a spreadsheet there. You can use one of dozens of time tracking apps on the market. You can walk around with a little notebook if you want to look all artsy as you're recording your time. The tool itself for tracking your time doesn't matter. What matters is that you actually do it. And when I suggest people try tracking their time for a few days or ideally a week, I get a little bit of pushback about the idea. And as I've talked to people, I've realized it's the same thing if anyone has ever tried to lose weight. You know that nutritionists will tell you to keep a food journal. And that is because it works. Like, there's pretty good evidence that people who write down what they eat lose significantly more weight than people who do not. So you think we would be all over this idea. But the truth is that we just don't want to know. Right? Like, we don't want to know that we grabbed 6 chocolate macaroons from the kitchen next to our home office over the course of a day. Just a purely hypothetical example. We just don't want to know. It's the same thing with time. We don't want to know how much time we are wasting. So let's just get this out of the way right now. We all waste time, okay? I waste time, you waste time, Kim may not waste time, but the rest of us, we all waste time, right? So it's not about figuring out how much time we waste. It is about making sure we're not telling ourselves stories about our time that aren't actually true. And when it comes to time, I find we have all kinds of stories we tell ourselves that may or may not actually be true. One of my favorite is about how many hours we are working. So I'm sure being out here in Silicon Valley, world of technology, many of you have been privy to these absolutely scintillating conversations about just how many hours people are working, right? So, oh, I worked 60 hours last week. 60, I wish I worked 60. I worked 70. Oh, 70, 70 is my light season. And so on it goes. I once met a young man at a party who told me he was working 180 hours a week at his startup. That is very impressive if you actually multiply 24 times 7. There was once a study, though, finding that people claiming 75-plus hour work weeks were off by about 25 hours. You can guess in which direction, right? And what it is that we sort of feel overworked or we feel tired, and so we put a high number on it. But is that number actually true? Well, let's find out. right? Let's find out so we can work with the number for sure. We do the opposite direction with leisure time. It's always funny to me. People tell me I have no leisure time whatsoever. I look at the time log and it's like, oh, it's interesting entry, Big Bang Theory. What would we classify that as? But what it is, again, is people feel like they don't have enough leisure time. They don't have as much as they want. But that's a different matter from having none, right? So we need to make sure we're working from good data. And again, it's not just about, you know, catching people on like, oh, you're claiming to work more hours or you're claiming to sleep fewer hours or have less leisure time. The issue is that sometimes we're telling ourselves stories that really do not serve us. So I saw a time log not long ago from a woman who is an executive at a major tech company around here. She had been telling herself the story like, oh, I never see my kids. I am an executive at a major tech company, ergo, I must never see my children, right? This is the story we tell ourselves out there. So she's walking around with this story in her head. She tracks her time for a week. We find out she's working 48 hours, which is a long work week. If you do that math where you exaggerate by 25 hours, that's like a 73-hour work week, right? But she was working in such a way that she was coming home at a reasonable hour, spending time with her family, doing more work at night after the kids went to bed. So basically, every minute they were awake, she was at home from school, she was there. And she looked at this, and she's like, oh, I used to feel guilt. I don't feel guilt anymore. So that is another good reason to figure out where the time is going, to make sure that the stories we tell ourselves are true and are serving us. So I hope you will try keeping your track of your time. If you do, just write down what you're doing as often as you remember in as much detail as you think will be helpful to you. Try to keep going for a week, then add up the major categories. How much time do you spend working, sleeping, driving around in the car? That was one that wasn't really registering for me. I have a home office, so I thought, like, oh, I'm never in the car. Guess what? I'm in the car a lot. You know, time with kids, exercising, volunteering, whatever it is you do in your life. Add it up and then ask yourself a few questions about it. First, what do I like most about my time? It's your life, your schedule. Hopefully something's working great, right? So let's celebrate that. Question two, what do I want to do more of with my time? And question three, what do I want to get off my plate? So that is the first strategy, to mind your hours. Second strategy is to look forward. So when it comes to time, I find we spend a lot of energy thinking about that last question. What do I want to spend less time doing? And if you read a lot of time management literature, which I do, kind of an occupational hazard of this, you find that a lot of articles are structured along this lines. It's like, we're going to help our readers find an extra hour in the day. We're going to help our viewers, our listeners, find an extra hour in the day. And the idea is we'll shave bits of time off everyday activities, add it up, we'll have time for the good stuff. And, you know, I confess I read a lot of these articles because I'm always hoping I'm going to find some great tip that's going to change my life. And then I'm reading through and it's stuff like, clean the shower while you're in it. Or soak your pasta before you boil it, so it takes less time to boil, in case pasta boiling is consuming a lot of your time. Or one that was, I mean, it truly said in all seriousness, if you send a lot of emails where the answer is okay, you should just type K instead of okay. Because I know I have always felt monstrously inefficient while typing the letter O. So, you know, they have these tips like this. And as we read it, we realize, you know, this kind of has it backwards. Like, we're not going to build the lives we want by saving bits of time writing K instead of OK. We're not going to build the lives we want by saving time. We build the lives we want, and then time saves itself. It is so much more effective to focus on that second question. What do I want to spend more time doing in my life? So when I do workshops with people, I actually have them make a really, really long list of anything they want to spend more time doing in their lives. And, you know, we make it a couple categories, professional, personal as well. Professional, I mean, not that people want to spend more time at work per se, but within the category of work, there's lots of things we'd like to devote our time to that we feel we're not doing as much as we should. Maybe it's mentoring your colleagues. Maybe it is reading for work. Maybe it's, you know, writing that white paper. You want to set yourself out as an expert. Maybe going to different conferences, different particular conferences you would like to do or places you would like to speak, or maybe you want to write that book someday. On the personal or relationship front, it might be things like I want to run a 5K, or I want to, you know, travel to London, or I want to join a choir, or I would like to do a scrapbook with my son devoted to this topic. So whatever it is, you know, make this good long list of anything you might want to spend more time doing. And then once you've sort of exhausted all possibilities and come back to this a couple of times, then you can start thinking, well, what would I like to be spending more time on sort of more immediately? Looking forward into the near future, what would I like to say are the big priorities that I would like to spend more time on? And a couple of practical ways you can start thinking about this. On the professional front, many people toward the end of the year get professional performance reviews. And so you could think about this looking forward to the end of 2018. If you were to give yourself a professional performance review, pretend it is the end of 2018 and you're giving yourself this performance review, and it has been an amazing year for you professionally, what 3 to 5 things would you have accomplished in 2018 that made it so amazing? And you can do this with your personal life too, looking forward. I don't know that people get so many of these anymore with all the photo cards that are out there these days, but certainly for a long time, in like the 1990s and stuff, we get these family holiday letters. You know what these are? These, like, you know, notes printed on colored sheets of paper and tucked into the holiday cards. It's about everything that the family was doing over the course of the year. And they're a bit of a funny, tedious genre of literature. But they serve a purpose, which is that they tell your friends and family what you did in your personal life over the course of the year that mattered to you. So you can think about writing one of these for 2018. Let's pretend it's the end of 2018. You're writing the family holiday letter, telling your friends and family what you did. And it was an amazing year. Like, this is the best family holiday letter ever, okay? What would you write? What 3 to 5 things did you and the people who you care about do in the course of 2018? And so now, between the performance review and the family holiday letter, we have a list of 6 to 10 top priorities for 2018. These are the things you really want to spend more time on this year. And then we can start thinking, looking forward, how can I build these things into my schedule? So I want you to make this list when you go home and keep it somewhere you can look at frequently. The third strategy, first things first. So I'm taking this phrase from one of my favorite time management and productivity books by the late Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Has anyone ever read that? A couple people? Oh, good. Of course, the productivity junkies come to the session. So he uses the phrase first things first. And what this means in a time management context is that time is highly elastic. We cannot make more time, but time will stretch to accommodate what we choose to do with it. And one of the best examples I've ever seen of this, and my apologies if anyone like Googled me before this and watched my TED Talk because I tell the story there, but I like the story, so I'm going to tell it again, is that I've had many people keep track of their time over the years. And this one particular woman was a very busy woman, worked in finance, 2 young kids, goes out for a Wednesday night for something, comes home to find that her water heater has broken, and there is now water all over her basement. So anyone ever experienced this, you know, pretty big mess. So her time log shows her dealing with the immediate aftermath that night. Next day, she's got plumbers coming in. Day after that, professional cleaning crew to deal with her ruined carpet. All of this is being recorded on her time log. Winds up taking 7 hours of her week. Well, if you think about it, 7 hours is like finding an extra hour in the day. But as she and I were talking about it, we had this conversation like, well, you know, what would have happened if at the start of the week we'd been like, let's see if we can find 7 hours to train for a triathlon. Let's see if we can find 7 hours to finally mentor those people at work we've been saying we should get coffee with for the past 6 months. Let's see if we can find 7 hours to make headway on reading War and Peace. And she would have said to what most of us would have said in this situation, like, no, I cannot find 7 hours. Where would I find 7 hours? Can't you see how busy I am? Yet when she had to find 7 hours, because there is water all over her basement, she found 7 hours. Time is highly elastic. We cannot make more time, but time will stretch to accommodate what we need or want to put into it. And so the key to time management is treating our priorities as the equivalent of that broken water heater. We need to get to them first things first. And to get at this, I like to use some language from one of the busiest people I ever interviewed. She was running a successful business. She also had 6 children. So I'm like, how on earth do you do it all, right? So I'm talking with her about this. And this, I always remember what she said to me. She said, listen, Laura, everything I do, every minute I spend is my choice. And rather than say, I don't have time to do X, Y, or Z, she'd say, I don't do X, Y, or Z because it's not a priority. I don't have time really means it's not a priority. If you think about it, That is more accurate language, right? I mean, I could tell you I don't have time to iron my sheets, but that's not true, because if somebody offered to pay me $100,000 to iron my sheets, I'd do it, right? I would totally do it. That is not going to happen. So I can acknowledge it's not a matter of lacking time. It's that I don't want to iron my sheets. And now, granted, there may be horrible consequences to making different choices, but that does not change the fact that it is a choice, right? And so using this language reminds us that time is a choice and that we are in charge of more aspects of it than we often think. And certainly, over the long run, we have the power to fill our lives with the things that deserve to be there. People say, okay, that sounds great. Yes, I want to fill my life with the important stuff first things first. Practically, how do I do it? Well, I think an important thing to remember is that we live our lives in weeks. We'll talk more about that in a minute. We often think of our lives in days, but we live our lives in weeks. And so putting first things first means thinking through our weeks before we are in them. I find a really good time to do this is Friday afternoon, this afternoon, right? If you work a Monday through Friday schedule, probably Friday afternoon is maybe not your peak productivity time, right? I know it is not mine. I am sliding into the weekend by that point, unable to start anything new, but I am willing to think about what future me should be doing. And so by taking a little bit of time on Friday afternoon to plan the week ahead, you can take what is often lost time and to turn it into some of the most productive time of the week. Anyway, Friday afternoon, make yourself a short three-category priority list: career, relationships, self. Making a three-category list reminds us that there should be something in all three categories. It is very hard to make a three-category list and then leave some of the categories blank, right? So right there, that will nudge you to have a more balanced life. But just a short list, 2 to 3 items in each, and then look at the next week and see where you can plan them in. So just practically thinking about this, maybe you've identified, looking forward, that you really want to get a promotion this year, which is awesome. There's just a study coming out that people who go to these women's conferences are more likely to get the promotion. We've probably been talking about that all day, right? But maybe that's on your list for what you want to do in the year. So you're thinking, well, what could I do that's a priority professionally advancing me toward that? Well, you know what I want to do? I'm going to talk to a friend of mine who recently did get promoted at this organization. We're going to meet for coffee. I'm going to ask her exactly what she did. All right, I'm going to put that on my list, my priority list for the week. Maybe on the relationship front, you have a friend you know who's going through a really tough time. You want to make sure you call her. All right, that goes on the list. Personal front, you want to go to that exercise class you've been talking about for the last 6 months and have yet to go to, right? You think I didn't know about that. All right, so those are on our list. And then you look at the week, say, where can I do those? Well, here's the pro tip. Let's try to front load the week, okay? How awesome is it to get through all this stuff as early as possible? So Friday afternoon, you send an email to your friend saying, hey, can you meet for coffee on Monday? I want to talk through this stuff with you. She emails back. You've got it on the calendar. You know, you make a note, you're going to call your friend Monday lunch break. You look at the schedule, you say, hey, look, that exercise class happens Monday night. I wonder if my spouse could cover childcare this evening, and I'll take Tuesday night, for instance, and so I can go to that class. Wow, we're going to accomplish our most important priorities for the week by the end of Monday. How awesome is that? How could it not be a great week if we've done that, right? So that's what we do to put first things first as we're looking forward. All right, so that was strategy 3. Strategy 4 is to move time around. So I've done a couple studies looking at how professional women spent their time. In particular, I did one that I looked at 1,001 days in the lives of women with professional jobs who also happen to have children. Lots of ways you can be busy in your life, but that is certainly one of them. And I looked how they spent their time hour by hour and did a lot of data analysis on it. And I found some interesting things. And one is that 3/4 of the women I studied did something personal during what were work hours in the course of their diary week. So when they tracked their time for a week, and I looked at how their time was going, they did something personal during their work hours. Sometimes it was visiting a child's school, it might have been getting a workout in, meeting a friend for lunch. So that sounds pretty awesome, right? Flip side of that was also true. 3/4 did something work-related during what one might consider personal hours, so evenings, weekends, early mornings. And I think the two are totally related. Work-life integration is the name of the game these days. Some people don't like that. They want work to be work, home to be home, never the two should meet, and that's fine. But for a lot of women, keeping sort of all hours in play for different things and being willing to be flexible about when things happen and moving time around to make it all fit means that they can work the long hours they need to in order to succeed, yet also have a full personal life too. So there were a couple strategies I saw women use most frequently to move time around to make it all fit in their busy lives. The first is working what I call a split shift. So you may have experienced this. This is what the woman at the tech company I talked about earlier was doing. If you need to work long hours, and yet you also have things you want to do in your personal life, be it hanging out with kids who go to bed early, seeing your friends, exercising, volunteering, you have a couple of choices. One is that you can just keep working until all the work is done, come home too late to do anything except watch TV, and then you can feel sad. That is option A. Option B, if you have a bit of flexibility in your job, is that you can leave before all the work is done, go home, spend the evening doing your stuff with hanging out with your family, exercising, volunteering, and then do a little bit more of the work later on after the kids go to bed, after you've done your volunteer gig, etc. And this way you are trading off work time for TV time as opposed to work time for family time or work time for other high-quality personal activities. And that was a choice that people were far more willing to make. I found that about half the women worked what I called the split shift at some point during their diary week. Now, people say, oh, it sounds like I'd never relax. Well, nobody did it 7 nights a week, okay? Nobody did it 5. Like, max was 4, and most people was more like 2 or 3 that they would do it. But what it meant is that they could work the long hours they needed to succeed and yet also have a full personal life too. And so I'm always wondering about that when I see these articles saying, well, women will never work 50-hour weeks because then they'd never see their kids. Because, you know, if you work 50 hours, then you have to commute too. So you'd leave the house at 8 and come home at 8 and you'd never see your kids. So women won't do it. I'm like, well, that's interesting. First, my children don't sleep till 8. Maybe yours do. I don't know. So you see them in the morning. But that's also not the way that women tend to work, is that they do tend to do this flexibility and working the split shift so that they are spending time with their children in the evenings as well as the weekends, of course, as well. Anyway, so the split shift was one. The second was thinking 168 hours, not 24. If you take nothing else from our time here together, I hope you remember this phrase. Think 168 hours, not 24. There are 24 hours in a day. There are 168 hours in a week. People always tell me, Laura, there are not enough hours in the day to get to everything I want to get to. And there aren't. But we don't live our lives in days. We live our lives in weeks. Things do not have to happen at the same time every day, nor do they have to happen daily in order to count in our lives. I see this most often with exercise. Maybe you have been guilty of having this conversation with saying like, oh, I'd love to exercise more, and then you talk yourself out of it because there's not a perfect time every single day, right? So I'd love to exercise, but I am not the kind of person who can leave for an hour every day at lunch to exercise. Or I'd love to exercise, but I have a family I want to see, and so I can't go to the gym for an hour every night after work. Okay, well, you don't have to do that. You just look at the whole of the week and see where you can fit it in. Maybe one day you get up a little bit early. Another day you go for a brisk walk at lunch. Another day, if you're co-parenting with someone, trade off. Each of you gets one night at the gym. Do something on the weekend, and wow, we've just exercised 4 times a week. It didn't happen at the same time every day, but it didn't have to, right? And funny thing, when people always tell me, people like to tell me sometimes about their daily habits, and I push a little bit more. I'm like, tell me about your daily habit. And I find that they often mean Monday through Thursday. But that is not daily. That is 4 times a week, right? And in fact, when we think about our lives, we often fall into this trap, not only of thinking daily, but also thinking that Monday to Thursday count more than other days, all right? But they don't. They're all just days. I track my time on these weekly spreadsheets, which I know right there makes me sound horrible. But anyway, they start Monday morning at 5 a.m., my spreadsheet. It goes Monday 5 a.m. to Monday 5 a.m. If the week starts Monday at 5 a.m., guess where the halfway point is? It is 5 p.m. Thursday. Now, I don't know about you, but 5 p.m. Thursday kind of sounds like the end of the week to me. But it is not. It is the exact halfway mark. There's just as much time between 5 a.m. Monday and 5 p.m. Thursday as 5 p.m. Thursday to 5 a.m. Monday. And yet we often think, oh, well, the first half counts more. But there's just as much space. So maybe our balance isn't perfect Monday through Thursday. It's not exactly what we might like. But I bet our balance is totally different end of day Thursday to Monday morning. And maybe the two balances balance each other out. So we can look at the week from 168 hours, not 24. Just to do a little bit of math with you, help with this perspective. 168 hours in a week. If you work 40 hours a week, full-time job, sleep 8 hours a night, 56 hours a week, that leaves 72 hours for other things. Quite a bit of time, right? Work 50 hours, that leaves 62 hours for other things. You work 60 hours, that leaves 52 hours for other things. We're still talking a lot of time, even working way more than full-time hours. So the time is there when we have the 168-hour perspective. And the final way that people tend to move time around to make their lives fit is to use their mornings. So mornings are really a great time to get things done. If there is something in your life that you really want to do and you are not finding space for it, I would suggest looking at your mornings. You know, people often say, oh, well, I'd love to exercise, I'd love to write that novel, and then they're like, I'm going to wait till the end of the day and see what time is left over. And then, shockingly, there isn't any time left over. If there is time left over, you're too tired to do anything. But if you get up early and do it, you might be able to make progress. This is time you can have to yourself before everyone else in the world seems to want a piece of you. A lot of people tell me, well, oh, I'm not a morning person, I can't use my mornings. And that may be true. There are people who are night owls. But the way to tell is if you are honestly doing your best work at night. You know, if you are writing that great American novel at night, then yes, you are a night owl. For most people, what this means, they think they're a night owl because they're tired in the morning. But the reason they're tired in the morning is that they were up late, like watching TV, looking at photos on Facebook of people they didn't like in high school anyway, right? So if that's you, if you track your time and discover that, you might want to try cutting that puttering off a little bit earlier, going to bed a bit earlier, waking up a bit earlier, turning unproductive evening hours into productive morning hours. All right, so that was strategy 4, move time around. Strategy 5 is to build in space. So many of the most successful people I've ever studied have a surprising amount of white space in their schedule. And as I've asked them about this and studied this, I found there's a couple reasons for this. One is that it's just practical. Everything takes longer than you think it will. If you think about like getting in the car in the morning, there's that space where you're getting your shoes on. There's that space when you're in the car. The time between these two things is not zero, particularly if you're putting other people in the car too, right? And if you think it's zero, that explains why you're always late and rushing. Or at work, if you've got meetings stacked up every half hour and one runs over, what happens? The rest kind of fall like dominoes through the day. Building in space means we can get caught up, so we are not late and rushing. And most people do not want to be late and rushing. But it's not just about practicality. It's also about opportunity. I really do think that open space invites opportunity in a way that a cluttered calendar can't. Somebody who reports to you wants to come talk about her great business ideas she has. You want to be like, yeah, I got an 8-minute window at 4:12, like next Thursday. You want to come back and talk to me then? No. You do not want to be that person. You want to be able to have these conversations. How do we have space for those conversations? Well, we need to build space into our schedule. A couple things you can do to do that. First way to build in space, be very careful with the word yes. A few people nodding in here. I mean, we have some people who may be a bit promiscuous with the word yes in here. I think what happens is that it's hard to say no. And the further something is in the future, the more we feel like we're assigning it to an entirely different person. Like, oh, September me won't be busy. September me won't have a lot going on. September me could totally do that. But funny thing, you will be the exact same person in September. You will have just as much going on. You will be just as busy, only now you will also have this other commitment that you were lukewarm about in February stacked onto the pile. All right, so a better question to ask yourself when asked to do something in the future is, would I do this tomorrow? Now, of course, you protest, I'm busy tomorrow. I'm booked up solid tomorrow, which is somewhat the point. But, you know, would you be willing to move stuff around, cancel things to try to fit in this new opportunity tomorrow? And if you would, great. You are going to be just as excited in September. But if the answer is no, no way, I would never do this tomorrow, probably that should be your answer for September as well. Another way we can build in space is doing what I call a calendar triage. So Friday afternoon, you are planning your week ahead, putting in your priorities, career, relationship, self. Take a few minutes to look at what is already on your calendar. Ask yourself a few questions about it. First, what do I really not want to do? Does it absolutely have to happen? I don't know, maybe it does. But if it doesn't, and you're going to cancel it, much better to do it ahead of time so everyone can make other plans. You can minimize stuff you can't kill. Maybe it's shorter meetings. Maybe it's that you look at your schedule and you see you're meeting with the same people on Tuesday and Thursday. If you're really disciplined about your agenda, you can get through both things on Tuesday. But what happens when people get so busy is they just start tromping from thing to thing, like middle schoolers changing classes. Here's my 2 o'clock, my 3 o'clock, my 4 o'clock. They deal with whatever's in front of them. And then on Thursday, you're staring at the same people from Tuesday, and you're like, geez. Looking at your schedule and strategizing a bit ahead of time, you can literally buy yourself hours in minutes. You might be able to delegate as well. Maybe you are a total rock star at something. You've been doing it forever. Well, it's nice to feel that things are easy. It may be time to give that to someone else, all right? We can do these three things on the home front, too. We can ignore, minimize, and outsource at home. People always tell me, Laura, it costs money to outsource household chores, which is true. But it does not cost anything to lower your standards. So I would highly recommend looking into that as well. I think we should go into that a little bit more, because I find that women have all kinds of stories we tell ourselves about what should be filling our time on the home front. And sometimes people tell you, you know it's a story when it goes like, well, everyone knows you have to do X, or my mother always told me you should do Y, right? And it was something like, my mother always told me you should do a small load of laundry every day. She did. I'm really sorry. That was the received wisdom, right, that came down. So we need to examine these stories and say, well, are they serving us? Is this the best use of my time? I saw this in another time log. A lawyer was tracking her time for me. She was intentionally working really late one night in order to bill some extra time so she could have a reasonable life the rest of the week. So that was great. Think 168 hours, not 24. Gold star. Her husband and the kids had been hanging out, having a grand old time, but they hadn't gotten the memo that she hoped the house would be spotless when she came home at 10 p.m., so she walks in, toys all over the floor. What does her time log show her doing? Picking them up, right? So I ask her about this. I'm like, well, why? Why? Is there going to be an 11 p.m. home inspection? Like, is somebody coming around to give you demerits for having toys all over the floor? No, there is nobody coming. There is no 11 p.m. home inspection. And in fact, those toys are just coming out again the next morning. Whereas you will never get that hour back. So better to sit back, relax, kick up your feet, have a glass of wine, learn to live in a beautiful mess. People say, well, I can't relax if my house is a mess. Okay, clean one room, shut the door, sit in there. That will free up all kinds of space. All right, so that is strategy 5, build in space. Strategy 6 is to take care of ourselves. So when I've studied the time logs from successful women, I found an interesting thing, which is that we have this story that if you're going to build a big career and have a family, you must never sleep, right? It is not true. It is empirically not true. All right. I had people keep track of their time, measuring every which way. 1,001 days, the average sleep was 7.8 hours per day. That doesn't mean people always slept 7.8 hours. It means over the week, it was 54 hours was the average. 90% of the people were averaging at least 7 hours a day over the course of the week. Interesting, huh? I wonder who wants us to believe that you'll never sleep if you build a career and raise a family. It's an interesting question. But anyway, so they were sleeping enough. They were also exercising. Most of the women I studied were, in fact, exercising. And I don't think this is a coincidence, because building a career, raising a family, both very meaningful, wonderful things, but they take a lot of energy. How do we get energy? Well, for most people, sleep and exercise don't take time. They make time. Whatever time you devote to them within reason is going to be paid back to you in terms of better focus. I often see this when I'm looking at time logs. You know, there are certain things we do that take energy and certain things we do that add to our energy levels. And you cannot do too many things in a row that take from your energy without adding in. And so we need to think about, well, what can I do during the day to add to my energy levels? Obviously, sleep at night, exercise at various points. But there's other things we can do to add to our energy levels, too. It might be talking with someone you really like. It might be getting outside. It might be even switching work tasks. And so we need to think about this through the day. How can we build in these things to add to our energy levels? Because when we don't, when we're like working through lunch, thinking we're being all productive, woohoo, I'm going to get out of here early, what happens? 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're like, oh, I just read that same email 6 times. Fascinating. Oh, there's a social media alert. Oh, let me go on that. And then, you know, following that link, then another link, then another link, and magically you're on Nordstrom shopping for boots. How did that happen? Well, what happened is that your brain needed a break, and you didn't take a real break, so it took a fake one. But it would be better to give yourself a real break. You'd actually save time by building in a real break, because I don't know about you, but I'm like 45 minutes over there on those internet rabbit holes that I will never get back. So build in a real break, and you could actually spend more focused time. You could also build in breaks for the week as a whole. I think that weekends are the secret weapon of successful people. I don't mean that people work around the clock on weekends. I also don't mean that they never work on weekends, because sometimes that happens. But I find that people who do weekends well view their weekends with an eye toward adding to their energy levels. And the problem is, I think weekends often go one of two different ways instead. Either we're so busy during the week, we get to the weekend and think, oh, I want to do nothing. But it's impossible to do nothing. You'll do something, but it may not be as rejuvenating as what you would have done if you put a tiny bit of thought into it. Or otherwise, weekends can turn into this, you know, mess of chores and children's activities, and you hit Monday feeling exhausted rather than ready to go. So what you need to do, a couple days ahead of time, think, what three things could I do on the weekend that would add to my energy levels? Not things you have to do, those things are gonna happen, but three things that you want to do. And they can be simple. It could be, you know, going for a bike ride, having dinner with your spouse, going to worship services or volunteering somewhere. But just three things that add to your energy levels. Where can those happen? And you'll have much better weekends. So that was strategy six, to take care of ourselves. If we look at what we've had so far, strategy one was to mind your hours, figure out where the time goes. Strategy two, look forward, figuring out what we want to spend more time doing. Strategy three, first things first, treating our priorities as the equivalent of that broken water heater. Strategy four, move time around. We're going to embrace work-life integration to make it all fit. Strategy five, build in space. Try and create white space on our calendars so we're open to opportunity. Strategy six is to take care of ourselves. And finally, strategy seven is to use bits of time. So even with all these, you know, great scheduling ideas, we can wind up with small bits of time that are hard to use well. You know what this is, 5 minutes while you are waiting for a phone call, 5 minutes while you're waiting for the bus. What do we all do with that time? Pull out the phone, right? Start deleting emails, those newsletters you cannot remember subscribing to, right? And so what happens is we spend all this time with it, but you know, it feels really productive to delete email. But it's not productive in the grand scheme of things, in that it's not going to say on your tombstone, she deleted all her email. Right? I think email, I mean, this is a whole separate speech, but email expands to fill the available space, okay? Better to deal with email at certain times, and then use these bits of time for something else, something that would add joy and meaning to your life. One thing I did recently that's really helped me, I downloaded the Kindle app on my phone, so now when I'm picking up the phone, I'm reading ebooks instead of just, you know, deleting email. And it is amazing, or I might even say embarrassing, how much literature I'm getting through. Now I'm using those bits of time to read instead of, I don't know, look at whatever. funny thing, I recently did a time diary project. It's going to be part of a next book. It's called Off the Clock. It's coming out in May. But I actually had people track, like, how many times they're checking their phone. Fun thing, people who feel like they have more time check their phone a lot less frequently than people who feel starved for time. Keep that in mind. Something to make you feel like time is a little bit more abundant. So you can do other things with these little bits of time. You can meditate. You can get outside. Maybe just try staring at the clouds. Like, it is really hard to feel like life is overwhelming and busy and I'm crazed and harried and have no space for everything if you just sit for 5 minutes and stare at the clouds. So anyway, just choose one of those small things to do with these bits of time, and you will have a lot more joy and meaning in your life. So those are my seven favorite tips. I think we have time for questions now. So we do.
We should definitely.
We should have time. We're good. We're the time management people here. We keep our stuff on track.
Exactly. Okay, so if you have questions, why don't you guys start lining up behind the microphones, and I'll start us off. I don't know about any of you, but when you started talking about when you say you don't want to do something, you're saying you don't. That's not a priority. Mm-hmm. And that kind of hits home, especially for anyone with kids and having to say no. And at least personally for me, it's very hard for me to say no to anything that has to do with someone other than myself. Mm. What is the tips on how to set priorities? how do I determine whether or not, I mean, because a lot of things are important, equally important in my life, my career, my relationship, myself. How do I prioritize best?
Well, and I think it's important to keep in mind that just because it's not something you're doing doesn't mean it isn't a wonderful, amazing thing. And it's partly that you know you can't give enough attention to it. It needs to go to somebody who will give it enough attention. It also might help to think, well, saying yes to this means I will be saying no to something else. Because time keeps passing, stuff will come up. There will be some other opportunity during this time that you are committing to. Maybe it's something you would have preferred to do. And that's not saying we can never make commitments, but we need to keep that in mind, that you will have to say no to something else because you're saying yes to this. So is it worth it? Is this something that sounds so exciting that you're like, yes, like I'd be willing to give up something else that was pretty good in order to do it? And if you are, great. Like that's wonderful. Then you should wholeheartedly say yes. But if you can't wholeheartedly say yes, then probably we should say no. Do we not have any questions? Oh my goodness. Okay, please, somebody come up. Sure. All right, thank you.
I'll go along with talking to your kids about time. What are your tips for how to pass these lessons on to them so we're not prioritizing for them, mm-hmm. but helping create these good habits so that we're doing it together?
Yeah, no, I think that time management in kids is somewhat of a, it's a very gradual thing. I mean, little kids have no sense of time whatsoever. When they get a little bit older, it becomes, well, we do this, then we do that. So instead of having, you know, an 8-year-old child plan out their whole week, and more be like, okay, well, first we do homework and violin practice, then we do video games, right? So that those are the sort of things that you can teach them. As children get a little bit older, then you can start thinking about like, well, you know, your job is a student right now. What do we have coming up? Like often teachers will give calendars for the year at the beginning. Have you looked at that? Have you seen when the major papers and tests are going to be? Interesting thought. I wonder what you'll need to do for that test. Maybe you'll need to study. I wonder what would happen if we only study the night before. interesting. Maybe we could try studying a little bit ahead. And as they sort of get these lessons, the idea of breaking big goals down into doable steps and then building these in as steps toward the final goal is a wonderful thing if people can pick it up. A lot of adults can't do that. That's why people are pulling all-nighters before deadlines. But if you can pass that idea on to kids, then I think that is probably the most important time management thing they can do. Yeah. Yes.
So this is a very personal question, but I live with a 1-year-old, a 2-and-a-quarter-year-old, and a 15-year-old.
Okay.
And as a lot of people in this room probably know, little kids require a lot of physical energy.
Yeah.
And then when they go to bed, I have to be there for my teen and be like have the emotional energy. And I just find that even if I have time, I don't have the energy to really do anything with it because I'm so tapped out.
Yes.
So I agree that there's time, but it's the energy that I struggle with. Do you have recommendations?
Well, one, I think, is realizing it doesn't have to be much. Like, I mean, you know, the 15-year-old, I mean, I'm sure you're awesome, but they probably don't want to spend every single minute with you. so there's that. It might be saying, well, you know, I'm just going to make sure I'm there, you know, as he or she's going to bed, and we're going to have a little conversation. And I know it's only going to take 10, 15 minutes, because it usually doesn't take longer than that. A lot of these things that are really high value tend not to take that much more time than that. And so if you have in your mind that it's not endless, it's only 15 minutes, somehow that can help you get through to that as well. And then I think it's also about seizing other opportunities too. Like it might be nice to find a sitter for the little kids sometime and go do something special with the 15-year-old that would be totally ruined by having the little children there. And if you plan maybe one of those activities every week or two, that can go a long way toward filling that well too.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yes.
You mentioned that if you can't find time for something, it's probably not a priority. I also found myself playing mental tricks when I have a long-term goal that's very difficult, challenging, and probably outside of my comfort zone. I will tell myself over time that I have no time for it. I would plan, and I would buy supplies, and I would like have this plan, and then somehow it's like, oh no, but I just switched careers. I can't do this.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So the question is that we tell ourselves we don't have time because something is outside of our comfort zone. So this is sort of that we don't actually want to do it, or we're scared to do it. And I think, you know, Somebody said something to me recently that I thought was kind of profound, that tracking your time is really helpful in life transitions, that it's helpful sort of figuring out where the time goes, and, how much time am I spending on the road every week, or how much time am I spending watching TV, and that's interesting for it. But it's also interesting, I mean, it's helpful just for getting a sense of life. And often it helps people feel more in control of life. And as they see, like, oh, there is some space here, or that I'm actually doing well on X, Y, or Z that I didn't think I was doing well on, then they start saying, okay, well, maybe I can make choices in other ways that are going to help advance me toward the life I want. And so I think it's often this nice sense of mastery over oneself that comes through doing something like that, that will help you be able to be courageous about future things. But yeah, I agree. Procrastination often is about being scared. You know, we don't want to fail. And so if we leave it till the last minute, well, of course we failed because we didn't have any time. But it wasn't time, right? It's more of a courage question. Yes.
Hi. You mentioned that when you say yes to something, then you'll be saying no to something else later. At work, especially like early on in your career, I feel like you're saying yes and because you think it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. How do you politely say no? And how, yeah, in a work setting or just
yeah.
So that you don't come off as
well, yeah. For one thing, I would say it's not a bad thing to necessarily spend the first few years of your career really gunning for it, right? Like, why not, right? It's a good time to do that because you're learning so much and everything is new and you're meeting all kinds of people. And so there are great opportunities. So I say, you know, that's not a bad thing. I wouldn't worry about that so much. I think that you can decide what are your non-negotiables, like what are the few things that you really truly care about. And then often you can sort of go to the mat on those and people will respect it. So it's not that like, oh, I'm not the kind of person who will ever work late. Like, you don't want to really be that, you know, person if, you know, especially if you're new in the office, you're like, I never work late. But if you say, I have a Tuesday night volunteering commitment, that means a ton to me. I want to always be there. I'll work late other nights. That's fine. But that is really important to me. Most reasonable colleagues are willing to respect something like that if it's limited. So make your limited list of what is most important to you and ask for that, and then sort of be flexible about the rest of the time. How are we doing? Good. One. Okay. Yes.
What is your advice to control freaks?
My advice to control freaks. I love that question. Is there more to it?
Because I'm the only one who can make breakfast. I'm the only one who can pack the lunch. I'm the only one.
But you're
who...
not. That's the. Yeah.
It's a habit. So.
Magically enough, it turns out they serve awesome lunches at school. They've gotten a lot better in the last like 10 years. We all have to figure out what truly matters to us. If it is in your mind that I really, really want to make lunch for my children every day, great. If it's some other story, like, oh, I don't think anything else can be acceptable. Ask yourself, well, is this really true? Could I maybe decide like one day a week they could do something else? They could buy lunch one day a week, or somebody, they could make their own lunches. Like, what a great life skill, right? To learn how to do that. I think if you try letting go in small bits and pieces and say, well, again, it's not every day. I'm not letting go completely. I'm just saying on Monday they're going to buy lunch. We'll see how it goes. Does Earth crash into the sun? No, it didn't, right? And then hopefully that will give space for future things.
We have 1 minute.
1 minute, okay. You were over here, sorry.
Yeah, thank you for your strategies. They were so very insightful and very helpful. I'm curious about multitasking. I've heard in the past multitasking is a mask for productivity or being productive. Wanted to kind of get your thoughts in terms of multitasking.
Yeah, it's really not. You really can't do two things at a time very well if they're very similar things. I mean, I was trying to write something this morning while people were talking to me. I kept being like, what did you say? what was that? You know, I can't do it. You can't do it. Often what it is people are like, well, I'm just answering emails while I'm on this conference call because I don't really need to pay attention. It's like, well, if you don't need to pay attention, why are you on the call? Like, don't take the call. Somebody else can give you notes later. Or if I'm in this meeting and it's really not that important to me, so that's why I'm entering, then don't go to the meeting, right? Like, it's not the cool kids table where you want to sit. Like, it's just taking your time. The only thing that works well with multitasking is things that are completely different parts of your brain are using, or if it doesn't matter what you're doing. So people like listen to podcasts while they're folding laundry. Like maybe you're less efficient, but who cares, right? Like it's helping to pass the time a little better. Or you could deepen your time in certain ways, often by incorporating someone else into something you're gonna do anyway. So that's like nice multitasking. You exercise with a friend or you commute with your spouse. You know, that way you're deepening a relationship at the same time you're doing something you were already gonna do. So that's the kind of multitasking that's nice. Otherwise, you know, if you're checking your email or doing something else, you're not doing that other thing. Don't fool yourself.
All right, well, that's the time. That's all the time we have. But let's thank Laura Vanderkamp once again. And a good note, go to the exhibit hall. She will be there signing her book.
I will
so
be right
definitely
there afterwards.
Check it out, and you could check your conference.
Yeah, I'd love to chat now, but
details.
I have to make right over there right now. So please come see me there, and I would love to have a conversation over there.
Thank you again, Laura.
All right, thank you.